So, Darren, do you know the worst possible business to get into based on the numbers?
Not yet, but I think we're going to find out.
I think it's probably the food manufacturing business.
Oh, boy.
The numbers are awful. Like, the failure rate's just out of control. Well, today on the show, we talked to Devin Barnett, and he has actually beaten the odds. He started a food manufacturing company. He's doing hot sauces, barbecue sauces, some other stuff. And he's growing his business. He's making it.
And he's really young, too.
Super young. Wise beyond his years. I was actually really fascinated to listen to him talk. This was a great conversation. Folks, it's Devin Barnett, fatfarmersauce.com.
Welcome to Beer and Business. You found the best podcast for entrepreneurs. We serve crafty business knowledge, comedy, and yes, beer. And now it's time for our hosts. If he were to pat you on the back, you'd list it on your resume. It's Jake Mullins. And his beer never gets warm. It just sits there, staying frosty, waiting for him. Mr. John Winnie. And if you spell his name in Scrabble, you automatically win. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Darren Flanagan.
Devin Barnett, welcome to the Beer and Business Show.
Thank you for having me.
Well, we wish you could be in studio. Darren and I are sitting here staring down a delicious double IPA from the official beer of the Beer and Business Podcast Studio, Lion Creek. Unfortunately, you're in South Carolina, right?
Yes, sir.
So here in South Carolina, you cannot have one of these beautiful beers. We are drinking a black.
Well, he could if he was here.
Well, yeah, but he's not, so it's his fault. Not,
so, yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, buddy. We're drinking a black double IPA. It's part of the Total Consciousness series, which I love. And this one's called, we had this once before, but we didn't know the name.
We
it's
got
called,
the name wrong.
Yes, it's Freeze Gopher.
Freeze Gopher.
From what movie?
Are you asking or telling me?
I'm asking facetiously. If you don't know that line, you really need to work on your...
It's what, the Shack of the Caddies, yes. I believe.
Yeah, Caddyshack. Love this beer. It's so good. It looks like a really dark stout, but cheers. It's got just this really weird, delicious IPA element to it. Mm. Man, that's delicious.
Wow. You want to know a little tip there about, here's a fun fact.
Yes, give it to me.
From the movie Caddyshack.
Okay.
I held the actual Billy Beru prototype in my hands.
What?
You know, that you remember?
Mm-hmm. Why? What? How? Like, what is this?
What is that? You remember the putter with the telescope on it and everything? So when I told you I used to work in the movie business.
Yeah.
Company that I work for actually produced Caddyshack. So in this back room, we had all this paraphernalia. And one day I was back there and I'm like, is that?
That's
it
the
can't
one?
Be. That's it. I thought it was, the real one. I'm sure that's what they used, but that was like the prototype of it.
Oh, that's really cool.
There you go.
Well, Devin, we're really excited to have you on the show today. Wish you were drinking this Lion Creek beer with us. For those of you that are in the Atlanta area, Lion Creek Brewing in Peachtree City, go join them in the brewery. It's open 7 days a week.
7 days a week.
Go to Brewery Hours, the app, and check to see when they're open. You should definitely go. And if you can't make it, pick up a 6-pack or 12 at the local bottle shop or your grocery store. That's this beer it. Here. Freeze Gopher is amazing. I'm totally digging it. Devin, you started a very interesting business. You are in the barbecue sauce, hot sauce, food business. And it's actually a business that I've studied because I've thought about getting into it in the past. And man, the numbers are scary. Like the failure rate in the beginning is...
Gosh, yeah.
Horrific. It's enough to scare anybody.
Well, I mean, I understand from the restaurant side, but I don't, I'm guessing from the production side and the supply side, it's got to be even.
Oh, it's really, really difficult to break into and then to figure out how to make money and much less build a business out of. But Devin, you've been doing this. And so I'm really fascinated to talk to you. So tell us, what was it that compelled you to get into such a high failure, high risk business?
Glutton for punishment?
Global pandemic.
Global pandemic.
Well,
really?
Interesting how that's changed a lot of people's lives. Explain.
I was welding at the time and coronavirus hit and I got laid off. And I was a huge hot sauce fanatic. So I was, I'll try this. Joined a couple hot sauce pages. Found a guy in North Carolina and just about 45 minutes from me that grew peppers. Next thing I know, I'm going to vendor fairs and selling stuff.
Just like that. You said, well, what the hell?
Yeah. Just went all in.
So did you? That's just crazy to me. Like, oh, well, I guess I'm going to get into this. And then you start rocking. Now, do you have history of entrepreneurism, or is this the first time you've decided to go into business for yourself?
This is the first time I've personally went in. My family's got a history of entrepreneurship.
So the bug runs in the family.
Oh yeah.
The unemployable bug.
Sure. You were probably just steady Eddie. It's like, no, I'm not going to be as crazy as the rest of the family. I'm not going to have those super highs and lows. Give me something steady. Welding is a great job. And then.
Well, I started in car sales and then that sucked. So I went to welding. Because I don't like people enough to sit there and tell you that you should buy this car. Metal doesn't talk back.
Fair enough.
Yeah. That's true.
I want to go back to this whole experience of you starting your business, and I don't want to gloss over how hard it is to break into this business. So if you could kind of walk us through, once you decided to do this, what was it like and what were some of the really big challenges you faced in the beginning as you were trying to get this business off the ground?
So whenever I first got into it, I had to look at what recipes were trademarked. Because a lot of hot sauce is very similar. I was like, before I even put peppers in a bottle to sell, you know, because if you've got too close to someone else's recipe, you know, you can get the pants sued clean off of you for using that as a monetary gain. So I had to check and make sure everything that I was wanting to put into a bottle would be mine.
Well, let me stop you there. How did you figure that out? I mean, were you doing research and figure this out, or did you stumble into it? Like, cause that's something that I bet most people wouldn't have thought about when it comes to getting into the food business. I
went
to the stores
and went and looked at every hot sauce bottle. Anytime I was at the store, I'd look at a bottle as I pass it. And if I saw the little trademark symbols, I was like, I can't do that pepper mix.
So this was during the pandemic. This is during COVID. You were doing this.
Yeah. Right before COVID, I looked at it.
You looked at it.
COVID was like, we're going to unemploy you so you can go do this.
So you had this idea slightly before, and then COVID and unemployment escalated it for you.
Yeah. Ever so slightly, but I didn't have, didn't have the nerve to do it because I was like, I got a steady job. I'm making decent money. And then, you know, that got ripped out from under me and I was like, what can I lose?
And you weren't doing this as a hobby beforehand at all or anything?
I had made a couple like just for myself.
Yeah.
And a couple of friends and people had told me, you know, you should sell it.
Mm-hmm. Just like
but I people, did have to make sure, you know,
it's like being a good cook and people tell you, you should open a restaurant.
Yeah, right. Yeah. There's a lot more to it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm still interested. The whole trademark thing, this is something that before looking into the industry, it never would have crossed my mind. So what compelled you to look at trademarks and look at bottles? Was it just by happen chance you saw that a bottle had a trademark, or did you read this somewhere?
Sriracha. Hoi Fung Sriracha is trademarked. And I didn't know you could trademark a recipe. So if you make Hoi Fung Sriracha to the T and try to sell it, you won't be doing much anymore. So it got me thinking, you know, what else could be trademarked? What else has got their recipes stuck down legally theirs?
Oh,
so you can make a different kind of sriracha.
Yeah, so I can make a different type of sriracha.
I mean,
I just couldn't use the exact.
So do they actually go into the like the percentages, or is it just the different ingredients that are going in there? Like if you said, I've got this type of pepper with vinegar and, I don't know, two other things in it. As long as you either add an additional ingredient or subtract one of those, are you okay? Or is that too close to still a trademark infringement?
If they've got everything is one-to-one and they've got habaneros, onion, vinegar, garlic, and salt and pepper. If I make everything one-to-one, but I take away pepper, I'm fine.
Hmm. there's probably some sort of legal threshold in terms of similarity.
Yeah.
But it's probably not as clear cut as you'd want it to be.
You can't be within, I think it's 80% similar. It's a ridiculously close number. But I learned the legal loophole.
Oh, I like loopholes.
I ferment all of my sauces.
Ferment. Oh.
So what does that have to do with trademarking?
So most sauces are cooked, and that allows for certain pathogens to die. Mm-hmm. Other sauces lower the pH enough to kill off those pathogens. So I took, you know, I can mimic a recipe to the T, but if I fermented it, it's a completely different sauce. Because certain percentages will go up and other percentages will go down. Like the citric acid percentage will raise. Mm-hmm. And the acidity level will drop.
And when you say pathogens, we're assuming those are probably bad things, right?
Like botulism. Oh, you know, a lot of sauces. You can open a fresh can of botulism and kill someone.
Yes.
Right. And so by fermenting, that kills the pathogens as well.
Yeah. I just took a different route.
Did you know that, or was that through your research?
I had family members who had fermented things before, and I had learned how to do it from them.
Okay.
But I had to do a little bit of research to make sure, you know, everything was getting on target.
And how did you, I know Jake asked you before, when you were doing this research to find out, hey, this is trademarked, I could get in trouble for doing this, and then you found the legal loophole. Was that just through research on your own, or did you have other people that kind of said, hey, pay attention to these things?
That was through research on my own.
Okay.
I was able to find that.
All right. So at some point you came up with a recipe or two, and you understood the legal loopholes and the laws against trademark infringement and all that kind of stuff. But having a recipe is just the first of many steps you need to take to break into this business. And it's where most people start. It's like, hey, I got this great recipe. Of course it's going to sell. But this business is really hard to break into. So what were some of the things that you did early on to get your business up and running?
The first thing I did was gain a social media following to me before I got it to my business.
To you?
I utilized TikTok.
What? Wait, whoa.
Oh, here we go.
You utilized TikTok just for your personal following?
Yeah, I built a personal following and to the point where I could do like live streams and stuff. And
nothing to do with hot sauce?
Not at first.
What were you doing on TikTok?
And I would slowly sprinkle that in.
Yeah, so what were you doing on TikTok, and do we want to know?
Yeah, we might as well, because we always joke about TikTok because we're old and we have no idea what that's about. We hear about it from the...
From the youth?
For the youths, those youths.
I would just film the pigs or the goats or the chickens, sometimes the ducks. Just go about that.
That's it? Like just go outside and film farm animals and that was it?
Just chat about them, talk about them.
Did you give them like funny voices and have them like pretend they were talking to each other? Anything?
Occasionally.
Now, how many people did you, I mean, you started with what? Maybe your close friends that followed you. And then how big did your audience grow before you started saying, let's talk about hot sauce now?
Once I got to 3,000 followers.
How long did that take you?
About 2 months.
Wow. I still don't even have like a few hundred.
See, I totally don't understand this about like YouTube and other social media platforms. My kids watch these videos about absolutely nothing.
I know. I've seen them. And I'm like, why?
It's like, hey guys, today I'm in my bedroom and I'm looking at this pillow and you see this pillow and they're like, wow, they're watching it. Their mouths are hanging open. Like they're watching this riveting movie. And it's like, guys, what the hell are you watching?
Well, I'm sure. Devin's probably more riveting than that.
I know, but it's just funny that he's making videos on the farm with the animals and stuff and just grows to 3,000 followers.
In 2 months.
No big deal.
So you have these followers. Any other social media, or was that like that was your go-to? You knew this is how my social media campaign is going to go. And when I hit this many followers, then I can start talking about hot sauce to launch my business there.
I just started with a TikTok, and then I built – once I actually launched the business and did all of that, I took the following from TikTok and utilized it to grow Instagram and Facebook.
Okay.
And now I'm on Twitter.
He's tweeting.
He's on the Twitter.
I got official. I got a Twitter.
Man, yeah, you're doing better than we are. We have a Twitter account. I don't know that we do anything with it at all.
That's the one that I tend to neglect.
We are not good at social media. Unfortunately,
this past year, 2021 is going to be the year.
We are doing it.
Everybody's saying 2021 is the year for a lot of things for a lot of people.
I'm going to use the Instagram.
So
speak it into existence. That's all I gotta do.
You said you start. That's exactly it. But you said you started sprinkling it in a little bit with TikTok.
Once I built up live streams, I was able to say, you know, I've got this in the works, and I would talk about, you know, making hot sauce, and me and my wife are going to vendor fairs and selling hot sauce that we're starting to make. And mm-hmm. I would slowly start introducing the fact that we had a website coming, and, you know, I was,
what you should have done is you should have done videos of watch me give hot sauce to my goat.
Oh. Go from those
fainting ones. Goat eats Reaper pepper sauce. All of a sudden you'd have been counting your followers in the millions.
Yeah, fainting goats just get massive following. They're a riot. They're hysterical.
That's probably cruel and unusual punishment, right? To give them
and people Reaper just sauce. Walk up and scare a fainting goat.
It's flavors the meat, though.
So
flavors the meat.
Goat tacos. Pretty, extra spicy.
Just do it this way.
Who was it? Season them from the inside.
Howie Mandel
like
said that.
It's like that Wagyu thing. They feed those cows certain things to flavor the meat.
Beer, massage them. They have a good life. And then they become food.
Why not just feed mayonnaise to tuna? Right. Right.
Wait, they don't?
I'm losing control, folks.
You know, I think it was George Carlin or Howie Mandel that came up with that one, I think. Could have been Stephen Wright. I can't take credit for that joke. But so you have this, you just said, I got laid off. I got this thing for hot sauce. I'm going to just start a TikTok following because I know down the road, this is how I'm going to launch my hot sauce business. And in the meantime, I'm going to start going to farmers markets and stuff and selling a product that I have no idea if it's going to do anything. It's about it in a nutshell so far. So when you started, because now you come into the whole pricing thing, right? And I'm sure you have a lot of upfront cost. I don't know what it is for fermenting, but you have to go find you put it in bottles, I'm assuming, or do you use jars?
We put it in bottles.
So you got to go find a supplier for bottles. What about labels?
So let me ask you another question here too while you're answering this. So did you decide to go the co-packer route, or are you guys actually doing your own manufacturing?
I see that pepper from the time I pick it off the plant till I'm handing the bottle over to somebody to sell.
Okay, so what I'd like you to do is walk through, because most people have no idea what I was talking about when I asked about co-packer.
Yeah.
So talk about your different options on production versus you manufacturing yourself or using a co-packer. And then talk about the process you had to go through to start your production and get it to where you could scale it. Because I think that's going to be pretty interesting just knowing how challenging that is.
For sure. So the first thing we had to do is we had to figure out where we could find the peppers we need and how low could I get them for. Once we found our guy and we had a supplier, we had bottles lined up, and that at that point we had to figure out, when we started, we were buying bottles off Amazon. Now we go with a company called Enmark. So once we did that, we had to figure out, okay, do we need to send all of this to a co-packer, which is someone who takes your recipe and builds it out in mass quantities and bottles it, labels it, does everything for you, and you just get it sent to you? Or if we could just, you know, do it ourselves and scale it that way. We found it much easier to do it ourselves.
Why is that?
Really?
So with co-packing, most of the time you have to have a sample cost, and it's usually about $450 worth of product that they want you to bring to the table to sample out bottles and labels and all that fun stuff. And for us to sample, you know, $450 to them, or $10, $15 for us to do it ourselves.
So you guys started really small volume, low key, and grew into it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, how about licensing?
So we had to get a business license, mm-hmm. retail license, you know, and we're working on getting something in our state. It's called an RVC. It's a wholesale license. Mm-hmm. And we fall under South Carolina cottage law.
Okay. So like here in Georgia, you need a cottage license.
Yeah. So we went the route of not going directly to a retail location, mm-hmm. or building out our own commercial kitchen. You know, we went the cottage law route first. That way we can build to the point of, you know, once we get a retail or a commercial kitchen, we're wanting to just strictly do wholesale and online ordering.
Okay.
Okay. So let me step back and explain this to people. So when it comes to manufacturing your own product, meaning you're making your own, you're touching the peppers, you're cooking it all up. I know that the laws are probably different between Georgia and South Carolina, but I'll explain to the best of my ability. You have one of two ways that you can do it. You can either do it in a commercial kitchen, which means you are a food manufacturer, legitimate, no restrictions, you can sell to anybody. Or you can do a cottage kitchen, as it's called in Georgia. And what that means is you can cook it in your own house. So you don't have to have...
Still have to pass certain inspections, right? They still have to come inspect your kitchen at your home.
Nope. No, well...
Yeah, you do. In Georgia, you do.
That's right, they do. You'll have to have your water sent off to get tested, and they will send somebody out to...
Look at it.
Yes. But it's not...
Slip them a 20, they walk away with... I mean...
inspect is kind of a air quotes word. Like, oh, you got a kitchen. Okay.
You got a kitchen there. Did the burners work? Yes. Okay.
Right. Did you have a fire extinguisher? Okay, you're good to go.
Yep.
But the big difference for Georgia is if you do a cottage kitchen... You can only sell direct to consumer. And in Georgia, you can't sell outside of the state of Georgia. You have to sell it inside the state boundary, so you can't ship it across state lines.
Damn, you are smart today.
Well, I looked into all this.
Say you're welcome. It was a compliment.
Thank you.
Yeah. How about in South Carolina?
Welcome. So I don't know how much that differs from South Carolina, but essentially the cottage kitchen laws are there to allow people a place to start that may not have the capital. Because you either have to build a commercial kitchen or you have to rent one. Mm-hmm. Renting one's obviously cheaper, but then you have to go do it all at one time because you're renting it by the hour, and it is still pretty expensive. But it's basically a springboard. It gives that artisan business person a place to start, and then you can kind of grow into a commercial kitchen in a bigger organization. Is it pretty similar in South Carolina? Are there any major differences between the cottage laws in South Carolina and Georgia?
So when I was researching it to figure out, you know, which way we wanted to go, none of our products use water. So automatically we didn't have to get a water test or anything like that. Mm. We just had to go through and get a food study done. And that's just where they, you know, get the nutrition facts, all that, you know, all that fun jazz, you know, percentages, what the pH is, what the true pH is, mm-hmm. all that. And then we were good to go. They didn't have to come out and inspect, because the main thing they have to inspect is your water.
Yep.
And we don't use water in any of our products. So, I mean, it's the same things like people who do like handcrafted stuff. Right. Under cottage law, none of them use water.
Sure.
They don't have to have the inspection done.
I mean, bath bombs or soaps.
Obviously, you have to do it safely, you know, because then your food today comes back and they're like, oh, you got botulism.
You're working with peppers.
And that's bad. That's not good for eating.
So if you used a co-packer, would that allow you to distribute to retail? Because I'm assuming they've already passed those tests? Mm-hmm.
Well, so co-packing, you send them your recipe, mm-hmm. along with an arm and a leg for how much they charge for sampling. I mean, if you're wanting to do 200,000 bottles, that's the way to go.
Sure.
If you want to do that by the end of next week, co-packer.
Okay.
So you send them your recipe. They find the supplier. They find everything. But they also are not going to – they're not going to care about your profit margin. They're not going to care about any of that. They're going to just find a supplier for you.
You send them
a
recipe.
And they're going to say, all right, we'll make 200,000 bottles for $2 a bottle. We need the check before we deliver them.
And they deliver back to you. They deliver everything back to you for distribution.
Yeah, but you have to have a warehouse location. Climate-controlled warehouse location.
Okay. Yep.
And some of them will do direct fulfillment. I mean, there's a lot of different models there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But the other thing, too, just for anybody that's interested in getting into something like this, one of the biggest pitfalls of co-packing is when you start, you're a small fish.
Yeah.
And so when it comes to scheduling and that sort of thing, if one of their huge customers comes and says, hey, we need 10 million bottles of ketchup, they're like, you're at the back of the line.
They push you aside.
Yeah, exactly. And their contracts are always stacked in their favor, giving them the option to do that. So there's a lot of, there's, I think, a time when it makes sense for somebody to transition to that. But let me ask you this. In South Carolina, do your cottage laws allow for out-of-state shipping?
Yes.
Oh, that's big.
Ooh, yum.
Yeah, because ours don't.
Huge.
Yeah, that's really big. And if anybody is interested in this, you know, highly suggest you look into your own state's laws. If you're in California, sorry, you really can't do anything in California at all in any business.
Or anything, period.
or any activity. Or you can barely live in there. But you should definitely look into your state laws because they are different. But it is it's a really cool springboard.
And we're not attorneys. Again,
If you can believe it.
That's why. Well, it's a good thing you said you look into your state laws and you might want to contact an attorney just to make sure. Did you contact an attorney to make sure all your T's were crossed and your I's were dotted before you really pulled the trigger on yours?
I talked with a brand developer.
A brand
that's
developer?
That's no.
No.
Okay. Yeah. That's a no.
All right.
At some point you'll need to.
Yeah.
How big can you, like, if you're going to do a full run, how many bottles do you usually do at one time?
Usually we'll do about 100 at a time. We have the capacity to do about 15,000 a month. 15, is what the numbers look out to.
1,000 bottles of hot sauce a month?
That's if we're working 5 days a week.
That's you and your wife together?
Yeah, me and my wife on it. She's actually sitting right here.
He's being watched by the boss.
What did she think when you came to her with this idea? Like, hey, I'm going to do hot sauce.
My wife will tell you, she said the word hot sauce maybe 10 times before we got together. She hates hot sauce.
So
hates it.
I got the same issue. I love hot sauce. My wife is like, oh my God, what are you doing putting hot sauce on that?
And I came to her and I was like, hey, babe, some hot sauce. And we were selling eggs and stuff at the farmer's market. And I was like, I just want to put it on the table and see if anyone likes it. And, you know, $75 here and there in hot sauce turned into, you know, $200. And then it turned into selling out vendor fairs. And then she was like, okay, I'm good with it.
There you go.
Hey, if it pays the bills.
Good test market.
That's right. Hell yeah. So.
But she supported me from the first moment.
That's great. I mean, that's really important. We did an episode last week about what it's like to be in a relationship if you're an entrepreneur or if you're a double entrepreneur household. And it's difficult because it's hard. Starting anything is really difficult. And then especially if it's like one of those things where your spouse says, excuse me, you want to do what?
Yeah.
Hot sauce?
Sounds like
excuse me?
This was more out of necessity than anything else.
Hey, necessity breeds.
You know? Well, I mean, you get laid off from your job as a welder, steady income, and it's like, what am I going to do next? And I've got probably a little bit of time to figure it out, but there you go. So Devin says, hot sauce. And his wife says, what was it? How did she say that again? Really? No, didn't quite do it.
You want to do what now?
I'm sure it was probably more like, what the?
You want to do hot sauce? Really?
Are you freaking nuts?
So you move along and you've been doing this. Okay, so we're in COVID for almost about a year now here or whatever. So
9 months.
You've already scaled this thing to a point where, as you said, farmer's market, you go from $75 to...
You're selling them out.
200, you're selling out. You're selling out at vendor fairs. At what point do you go, I got something. I think it's time to make this bigger. Is that when you went from social media to saying, I need a website? And
yes.
Then how did you figure out distribution? And how do you, you know, now you get into all your packing and shipping costs and everything else. How'd you figure all this out? And what was your plan?
So we started working with a developer named Troy. He works for owns Troico Live, does an amazing job. And he kind of started guiding us in the legal spots we needed to go, showed us, you know, these are the type of boxes you need to use, and this is how much your shipping is going to cost. And shipping is a nightmare to figure out.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. He sat there.
Thank God you've got the USPS there to help you.
Oh, yeah. They're doing fantastic.
Darren almost spit his beer out.
We had USPS deliver a box. I won't badmouth them. We had a specific mail carrier, unbeknown. It wasn't FedEx or UPS. We had them deliver a bottle. It was three bottles that a guy had ordered, completely destroyed. They put it in a bag. The box didn't even look like a box anymore, and they put it on his front porch.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my goodness.
It's like Ace Ventura delivering it.
And a new hot sauce came out of the mix.
People don't ever account for is, you know, you got to reimburse these people or send them a new bottle.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Damage control insurance, loss. Yeah.
So, Devin, I want to ask you something, and I think this will get us into some really interesting conversation. When you and I spoke about you coming on the podcast, I asked you if you had learned some things that you think really helped propel you to success. And you shared some philosophies and some things that you did that others failed at. So I'd like you to talk to me about, you know, looking at where you're at now, what are some of those things you think that have really helped you guys succeed where others failed?
Patience. You know, we've scaled pretty quickly, but we haven't forced it. We have been very patient, and we've worked on what we have to make it perfect. You know, we have a decent number of sauces on our website and sauces we sell. You know, we've got other friends who tried things and they were making 15 different things and they were trying to get it out there selling it. We stepped back and we were like, what do we make really good? We figured it out. And we were patient and diligent with what we were making. You know, we weren't just throwing stuff together and saying, here's a hot sauce, buy this. We were sitting back and evaluating what we have. You know, we quality control everything. You know, we take those extra couple minutes of examining a pepper to make sure it's, you know, the right one to go into this batch. It makes the difference. Other people are, I've got to get this batch done. I've got to make this batch, not I've got to watch what goes into this batch. And we were patient. It's a lot of hard work. But we made sure that we were proud of our product. And that allowed us to, once we started selling our product, it spread like wildfire. You know, and these other people, they were just getting a product out there. And I mean, they've fizzled out now. We've outlasted a lot of the friends I've had that started businesses at the beginning of COVID. They're not in it anymore. You know, they did it as a little fling, but they didn't get the success that we got. So they died out.
You know, I want patience and I want it now.
Just wait.
Oh, I gotta wait.
Just wait. Damn for it. It'll come sooner than you think.
Okay. this is a really good point. It's a wise one, and we've heard this talked about before. So, like, I think about Mercedes Bankston. Mm-hmm. When we had her on, it was the first time we heard the coin minimum viable product uttered on the show. And it sounds to me like that's what you're talking about. You guys had the patience. Because I think really the real trick is balancing patience and urgency, because you have to have an incredible sense of urgency in business, but you do also have to be patient. And it sounds to me like what you guys were patient on is making sure that the products that you were bringing out were products that people wanted, that were priced accordingly. You know, it's like, oh, I would spend my money on that. And others were like, yeah, I'm spending my money on that. It's delicious.
Quality and consistency.
Yeah, absolutely. And so that's a really, it's a really interesting point to hear you voice it that way, because Darren, I've seen this with breweries. You know, how many breweries have fizzled out that have opened? Like, you know, you get these breweries that they open up and they've got like, you know, 50 different beers. You're like a marshmallow, triple boysenberry, chocolate chip wheat ale. And you're like, okay. Like, but they can't make a good IPA.
Right.
You know, so they can't make
just a nice pilsner that's.
Right. So it's like, where's that go-to product?
Give me the staples.
That consistent. Exactly. And it sounds like that's what you guys did, is like, let's start small. Small menu of items and make them really good and then iterate over time.
Oh, that's 110% what we did. Like, it's that minimum viable product is the smartest thing you can ever follow, because nobody makes everything perfect. Some people make a lot of things good, but you can make fewer things great.
It's true.
Kind of what you say about your kids when they ask you, right?
You know? Yeah, the first one's good. The second one's great.
That's it. So, now, how many products did you start with?
We started with three.
And are they all in the stable still to this day?
They're not.
They're not. Are any of them still there?
When season comes in, two of them are.
So seasonal products based on peppers that are growing.
Oh, that's how farming works there.
Based on fruits.
Based on fruits.
Oh, the
It's our watermelon hot sauce and our peach hot sauce.
Yeah, I'm down for both of those.
I love peaches. I'm just allergic to
them. We were going to do those all year round, but I took a step back, got real patient, and looked real hard at what was selling.
Right.
And then we reevaluated, built out a few recipes, and knocked it down. We've got essentials. Everybody wants a good habanero mango. That's what we made. Everybody wants a nice jalapeno sauce. That's what we made. Mm-hmm. You know, we do have a blueberry and a citrus. You know, we've got the roasted garlic sauce, and we've got the super hot sauce that everybody, for some reason, wants.
To destroy their stomach lining. Isn't that, the point?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So you have a new baseline, and then you have your seasonal products. When did you? I noticed on your website you have a barbecue sauce.
Yeah. So
when did that? We come noticed into your product mix?
Not everybody likes hot sauce, and I wanted to maximize our product efficiency. So if people come to our website, if I can get 100 people to look at our website. If only 20 of them like hot sauce, you know, 50% of that 20 buy out of 100 people, I've sold $100 at most. So I looked, I was like, what is another good thing people love? We did barbecue sauce. Mm-hmm. We were getting told, you know, man, your hot sauces are great. I'm not big on peppers. You should try making a barbecue sauce. We had a family recipe that we decided to tweak a little bit, and it got a huge response. But some people were like, you know, we like your barbecue sauce and your hot sauce. You should make a hot one. So we did the hot and the sweet for a while. Mm-hmm. And then once those were selling really good, we got comfortable. And we're like, okay, we can maybe introduce a new barbecue sauce. So we introduced our honey whiskey base.
Honey whiskey base. Well, let's back up for a second, because you brought up an interesting fact, an important fact. You tested your products on the market, right? So you started with barbecue sauce, tested it. You just didn't go full scale and make massive quantities, just assuming. You did a test market. You got the feedback and you said, okay, we got a viable product. So you push that out. Listen to your customers on what they wanted, and then tried a new product and found that it worked as well.
Oh, yeah. Well, I learned real quick, if you've got 18 people telling you something's not good, it's not good. And if you've got 18 people telling you that this is the best barbecue sauce I've ever put in their mouth,
then you better make
you got something to go off of. We listen to the people that buy our product. That is a huge thing that has helped us.
That's, you know what, this is a great point. So as we're talking about, you know, we're having a lot of discussion about this MVP, minimum mm-hmm. viable product, talked about it many times before. Yeah. These guys did it with their sauces. They were patient enough to wait and get the feedback and iterate and say, okay, this is a winner, let's roll it out. But in part of doing that, they listened to feedback.
Unlike,
which is not so easy.
No, look at Coca-Cola. Maybe, well, you were young when Coke changed their recipe.
Oh, the new Coke? Oh, my God, that was awful.
And it came out, and it was like 1985 or something.
Yeah, it was awful.
People bitched and moaned, and they're like, okay, we're going to Coke Classic now.
I know.
Sorry we pissed off so many of you. It's like, where was your test market?
I know, that's crazy. Yeah,
we
didn't
do it. We just decided to change it for the hell of it.
Max Headroom knew the best.
And here's Devin making hot sauces.
And he gets it. Yeah.
He gets it.
But so here's what I want to bring up about that, Devin, because when you really legitimately do that and listen to feedback, you get some feedback you don't like.
Oh, yeah.
Especially when you're iterating, you're making a product, you're pouring your heart and soul into it, and somebody's like, that's awful. That's difficult to listen to.
Yeah, well, I've got a little technique on how I deal with that.
Oh, I'm all ears. I want to hear this.
So we get an outpouring of positive comments.
Uh-huh.
Those are great and all. Nine times out of ten, I'll look at them, take the good parts, the rest of the fluffy stuff, like, oh, my husband loved this and this, this, and this. I just push it aside and I look at what was the main point you were getting across. And I do the exact same thing with a negative comment. If somebody just says, oh, your sauce is awful, I just push it aside. You're not going to buy anything from me.
Sure.
If somebody says, you know, we bought these three sauces from you and your Southern Sun hot sauce was off the charts, but the Blazenberry was so bad, I couldn't put it in my mouth. You know, the good negative comments to read are the ones that tell you what was wrong.
Yes.
Not that it was just wrong. I don't dwell on somebody who says your hot sauce was awful. Okay, you have a great day. I hope hope your tree burns down at Christmas time. I'm just kidding.
Go enjoy your Tabasco sauce.
Yeah.
We only really look at the ones that tell us what was wrong, not just that it was wrong. People get so bent out of shape when somebody says your product sucks. Okay, I would much rather have 1,000 people look me in the eyes and tell me my product sucks than have another 1,000 people look me in the eyes and say, your product's great, don't change anything. You know, I'd like to have, 100,000 people tell me this is what's wrong with your product.
Yes.
I like those comments a whole lot better than we love your sauce. This is the greatest thing we've put in our mouth. Because I can build off of, this is what I didn't like about your sauce. Because if you didn't like it, somebody else didn't like it.
Mm-hmm.
And I start getting this pool of, we didn't like this. And then I can narrow it down to one thing. And I'm like, okay, I can evaluate that. I can change that.
Like balance and flavors.
I can't change
flavors.
The mind of the 100 people who said your sauce sucks. But I can change the minds of the people that I tweaked to get the sauce to their liking as well.
Or possibly even change the messaging. Like if you were getting feedback that people thought it was too spicy mm-hmm. and it wasn't a quote unquote hot barbecue sauce, it's like, well, let's market it to people that like spicy. It's because the people that like it love it, you know? So it could be one of those things where it's maybe not even changing the product, but changing the messaging.
Like the, what was the one you said? The habanero mango?
Yeah.
I mean, if somebody said, if you had a bunch of people who said, I don't taste the mango at all. You know, I'm getting the hot, but not the sweet. Then you might want to add a little more mango or something like that. So I get it. Yeah. I get your feedback where he's going with it.
Yeah. Cause you can take it either direction.
Mm, and we used that feedback and we were able to tweak our blueberry hot sauce.
Blueberry hot sauce. I want to try some
People telling me, I don't really taste any sweetness. So we add a little bit more. Then we had people saying it was way too blueberry-y. Blueberry-y.
Can't have too much blueberry.
That's a word in my dictionary. It's a goodly one.
I will
one.
Take it.
Too many letters for you to tweet there.
And we had
too many syllables.
We took that And, you know, we had hit both those spectrums. So we evaluated it and we're like, all right, what's dead in the middle of what we're doing? Mm-hmm. And we did it. And then it got an astounding response.
Now, how are you doing? Are you doing that with your labeling by chance at all? Like, are you doing A/B testing with your labels to see which one attracts more people?
Yes, we did it with, we did cricketed labels.
Mm-hmm.
And those went over well.
Like these crickets? But,
I don't know. Can he hear
What is that? A cricketed label?
Cricketed, the cricket cutter.
It's a vinyl label that.
Oh, label the cricket cut.
Yeah,
the cricket. Oh, cut. Not the animals.
Not the insects.
I think they're really called cry cuts.
Yes. I know what you're talking about.
Their attorneys will be calling crickets. Us, yes. Letting us know how to pronounce the name correctly.
My God, I just got emailed a cease and desist right now.
I'm sorry.
Yep. Okay, so you start, so like the vinyl cut, you started with that.
Yeah, and then we took. Well, we started with clear Avery labels. People didn't like those.
Yep.
They said they're hard to read and they rub off on my hands when I'm shaking hot sauce off. So we're like, okay, that's bad. So we went to the cricket labels. And they're like, this is great and all, but you got to have your ingredients and all this, that, and the other. So we went to full wrap labels. And it's got, the label now has a picture of me on it. It has a picture, it's a picture of me holding one of our goats. The ingredient list, you know, it's got a QR scanner to our website, a QR scanner to our Facebook.
Oh, that's smart.
And we took everything that people said, oh, this would be great on a label, and we put it on there.
That's interesting.
On a little bottle of hot sauce, you squeezed all that information.
Yeah, Darren, it's not that complicated, man. It's
pretty cool.
Small but mighty.
Yeah. So I want to go back to this topic of feedback, though, because I don't want to gloss over how important your attitude is towards feedback. And it's interesting because this was something I used to rail on for years when I was in corporate America. I would, because I managed managers, and I would tell people all the time, you can't just pat somebody on the back and tell them good job. It's one of the worst things you can do because they're like, you know, correct. Okay, what the hell did I do? You know, you got to be really specific. And it's never easy to listen to negative feedback. I don't care how much you say like, oh, I expect it. I take it and I use it for good and all that kind of stuff. You can have that attitude. But when somebody tells you that they don't like something you made, it's like, well, fuck, that's not what I wanted. That's not good. But if you can at least have the attitude that, hey, if there's something in there, if I can learn something, I'm going to use it. And that's actually the same method that we've used on the podcast. You know, if people tell us that, you know, we suck, I'm like, yeah, go to hell. I'm sorry. We had to have Darren on the show. Whatever. I mean, but if somebody's like, man, I wish you guys would do X, Y, and Z. It's like, let me think about that. How could we implement that in the show? And we've gone through several iterations of the format of our show, listening to feedback. And there was times when I heard feedback that I was like, man, that really kind of hurts to hear.
Yeah.
But I'm glad that somebody told me because I know that other people are thinking the same thing.
In a nice way.
Well, even if it's not in a nice way, I mean, as long as it's specific.
Yes. Not in general.
Okay, so if one person thought that, 10 people thought it, 20 people thought it, and it's an easy fix. So we can do something about that. Doesn't mean it was easy to hear, but if you can at least be productive in the way that you accept it. I think it's all in the way that you accept that feedback that determines whether or not it will be used for good.
Oh, yeah. We took feedback. And yeah, you're dead on the head. It is hard to listen to somebody say, the thing that you work so hard to create is not good.
Yep. Because you wouldn't have released it to the market if you didn't think it was delicious yourself. Yeah, so it's correct. Like, well, how can you say this freaking delicious thing that I made isn't good? You can go fuck a pile yourself.
I got news for you. Have you ever had popcorn that was like popped in bacon grease?
What?
It's not good.
Oh,
but
it's not?
The person who made it thought it was absolutely delicious, but that's what they grew up on. And then they brought it to a party.
Yeah, I've never had it. I mean, to me, the thought of anything in bacon grease sounds good, but
anything in bacon
sounds delicious,
but really good. But
no bueno.
No bueno.
Yeah, it just needs butter and salt. Yeah. No bacon.
I mean, we took feedback, and we've started building a whole nother line of sauces based off that feedback. We're calling them not sauce. Because so many people are like, we like peppers, but we don't like heat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so we're making all of our hot sauces, but we're making them with no heat whatsoever.
Perfect for Jake's wife.
That is brilliant, dude. Not sauce.
Not sauce. I love it.
Not nut sauce. That's not different.
N-O-T.
Not sauce.
Not, yeah, only one of them will create
make
a
sure,
child.
Make sure you pronounce the O. It's not a U, folks. It's not a, you know, the bad stuff. You know what I'm talking about, Darren?
The stuff that people with nut allergies would have a problem
That's
with.
That's exactly what it meant.
Nut sauce.
Hey, man, I got a peanut allergy. Can't do those nuts.
That's why he's not going to make anything with nuts in it.
Oh, my gosh.
We actually thought about doing peanut butter at one point, but that...
Spicy peanut butter. Oh, that would be so good.
Mm, you might be on the
side. That died real quick.
Like peanut butter and honey with a little sriracha in there.
No, I can't do the sriracha. You'll get sued.
The Wang Fung sriracha. You could do your own version the
Wang,
of it.
Wang Chung?
I don't know what it is. Are
we Wang Chung?
I know. I've got Wei it in the fridge. I know it's in my fridge.
Are we Wei Chung?
We're Wang Chung and... Wang Chung tonight. I like it.
It's a nut sauce. I love it, man.
Nut sauce. Not...
Not sauce. Not it's not nut sauce. Not.
So you're going to still capture the flavor, but keep the heat out of it. How the heck are you? Well, I mean, without delving into like
remove the seeds.
Still freaking hot.
That's actually not correct.
Bullshit.
Damn it!
The skin still contain capsaicin. I won't divulge in the secret because it's
yeah. We were talking about that. Seeds. What is capsaicin?
Capsaicin is the chemical that once it hits your tongue, it is the painful part of a pepper. It is the hot part.
The essence part. Of life.
Yeah.
Yes. The most amazing chemical on the planet.
Why is it? You were explaining some of the reasons why it's so amazing before.
Super good for your intestinal tract. It does eat away some of the mucus in your stomach lining, but it causes it to grow back thicker and fuller.
Hmm.
Helps with digestion.
Hmm. You All know what? That's probably... So... They used to call me iron stomach because I ate a lot of spicy stuff.
That's why.
And I guess my mucus grew back thicker and stronger because
I went to somewhere in Asia. Started going flying to Asia and eating.
I don't care how much of an iron stomach you have in India. You're on your own.
Don't know what's in everything. I'm sure they don't do a lot of quality control.
Sir, I know this is bottled water, but it's brown. Is that normal?
So. With the capsaicin is still there, so it's like it doesn't matter. You take the seeds out, Scottish bonnet is still going to be friggin' hot.
Yeah.
Or a Carolina Reaper is still going to...
Melt your face off.
Extremely hot. So is it a trade secret that you... Or do just people in the hot sauce world know that we know how to take the heat out of it and still give you the flavor?
It's kind of a... Nobody else has been able to quite do it.
Mm-hmm.
We stumbled on it correctly. I'll put it like that.
Okay. Ooh.
And we have been able to recreate it.
All right. Well, we won't have you really. I mean, that's awesome that you've done that. And I don't want you to like trip over your trade secret there at all. So
it's actually, it's fascinating because
I love it.
So I used to, when I was younger, I ate the spiciest stuff you could imagine. Didn't bother me. As I've gotten older, I can't handle spicy like I used to.
And roller coasters probably too.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff. Reading. It's funny how books get blurry when you get to my age.
Picture books.
What the hell is this? But I don't have the stomach for the spicy stuff like I used to. I still like spicy, but nothing like I used to eat. But I'm very fascinated about this not sauce.
Mm-hmm.
That can, because I always like the flavor of peppers.
I think you're honest. I think that's going to sell up, fly off the shelves. I don't think you'll be able to keep up with the production.
We thought about doing that from some of the feedback. Mm-hmm. So one other thing on our website is apple butter.
Saw that.
I don't care how many bottles of hot sauce I sell. I will never match the sales of my wife's apple butter.
Really?
Don't care if I sell a million bottles, she'll sell a million and five.
So that's your wife's product. She said, can I put this one thing on your website?
Well, she thins out the hot sauces for us. And she keeps the consistency right. I don't have the patience on that side that she does.
Mm-hmm.
She will sit there with a strainer in a bowl and push mash through and get every drop of that liquid goodness out. And then we've got, you know, this mash left. She'll toss it back in the vat of vinegar and do it again.
God bless her.
Oof, wow.
Yeah, I don't have that kind of patience. I can tell you that right now.
So I'm assuming you've got your, did you have any goals or projections for 2020 when you started the business?
When we started the business, the only thing we wanted to do, so I'm huge into making goals.
Mm-hmm.
I make a goal every day. What can I do to expand my business or make it better? Because everybody has got something they can do throughout the day to better themselves or better their business. I don't care if you say, well, I've got no time throughout my day. You pick up that phone and look at Facebook, you got time. You know, and so we had no big goals for 2020. Mm-hmm. We had daily goals. And then I sat there and I was like, you know what I want? I want to have a website by the end of 2020. Or at least be starting on one. November hit. We're working on the website. We've got orders flying in. You know, we've just been hit with support. I mean, we have been backhanded with support. Our goal is a website.
There you go. Well, I like what you said when we were talking before, prior to it. You said with your goals, you had to speak them into existence.
Oh, yeah. If you can't say it out loud and fully believe yourself in saying it, you won't achieve it. If you can say that you're going to do something and you have the motivation behind it to do it, it'll happen every time.
How do you keep yourself motivated to hit those goals?
My motivation, this is how I do it, and this is how I think everybody should do it. Stop at the end of the day. Pick a time at the day where you stop and you are just you. You don't talk business. You don't touch anything revolving around what you do throughout the day. You are just you. You know, sit down with the wife. Sit down with the kids. Sit down, read a book. You know, play a video game if you're into that. Whittle. Do something that you love. I don't care. Everybody says, you know, love what you do. You never work a day in your life. There are parts of a business that you will hate and you have to work through. At some point throughout the day, 15 minutes, an hour, sit down and be you. And then when you come back to the business, you know, you're back to, you know, I'm really doing this. This is my daily life. But you've also got time to be yourself, which, you know, most people in the 9-to-5 world don't have. You know, eat, sleep, work, repeat.
It's a really good point that you bring up. And we've heard other people say this. I like the way that you phrased it. You're chasing your passion. You're passionate about hot sauce. You love it. You told us before the podcast that you ate like 15 Carolina Reapers for money.
$100 a piece.
Jesus, crazy, dude. But you know, this is something that you love. You are so passionate about. And now you've got a business where you're making money doing what you love. But nobody told you about the accounting.
Nobody told me.
Hey, what is this bookkeeping bullshit?
Press the slurry mash back down and cook it again. I don't want to do that. Let me find somebody. There you go.
What do you mean taxes? This is bull. I don't want to do that. So it doesn't matter what business you're in. Mm-hmm. If you chase your passion, you're doing what you love, there's going to be parts of it that you're like, oh, I don't want to do this.
Those are the quick goals that you set to get or, to the point to have somebody else do them for you. So you got to work up to it.
Or, and we talk about this all the time, and we can't talk about it enough for the people that listen to this show that haven't yet started their business. But even if you get into something doing what you love, you are going to get the living snot kicked out of you on multiple occasions.
Every day.
Yes, a lot. And we were actually talking about this earlier today. Darren and I were in a meeting, and we were talking about business. It's like a roller coaster. You know, when you're in it, it's the highest highs and the lowest lows. You know, when you hit those highs, it's like, oh, my God, I've never felt this good. And then when you hit the lows, you're like, why in the hell did I think I was going to get into business for myself? This is stupid. And you're right. It's good to find that time to just get back to normalcy, being yourself. And I think that that kind of recharges the batteries, if you will.
Oh, yeah. And so many people, you know, they're super excited to start a business. You know, they're passionate about it and they're pushing through it. You know, they start the business. They're like, oh, my God, I'm doing this. This is amazing. They get a couple sales under their belts. They start trying to scale up and they hit that valley of despair. They're like, oh, crap, this is hard. I can't do this. How does anybody do this? Then they find something else and like, oh, I'm super passionate about this too. They get right back to that valley of despair, start over again. Most people, when they get to those lows, they don't want to push through. You know, business, you are an arrow in business and you are constantly being pulled back. Eventually that string pulling you back is either going to snap and you're going to fail, or you're going to be resilient and you're going to fly forward when that string gets let go.
It's true, man. That's a great way to put it. And you're right. It does not matter what business you're in, whatever it is, you are going to hit those points. Like, it's one of those things we joke about every day. You get kicked in the teeth, and you do.
Or kicked in the jimmy.
Or kick me in the jimmy. But there are some days where you're like something will happen, and you go, my God, what have I done?
Yeah.
What have I done? And those are the most critical moments. And this is key, because if you're listening, if it's your first time tuning in, you've never heard us talk about this. This is so important. When you hit that point, don't think that the people that are successful just power through it because they're superheroes. It freaking sucks. Like when those days come and it seems like everything takes you backwards, you're losing ground, and you're asking yourself, why did I do this? You don't just say, you know what, I'm thinking positive and everything's good. You might curl up in the corner for a while and just feel terrible.
Give yourself a wedgie, trying to pick yourself back up. Right. This isn't working. This
it only hurts worse. More when I try to pick up. But the
give
whole
yourself a swirly.
It's about the equivalent.
Mm-hmm.
But the big point here is, eventually you got to get back, and it's not going to be easy.
You're not a
superhero. It's not like it's water off a duck's back. It's no big deal. I'm coming back at it. I'm really strong. You may need a minute to recenter. You may need a minute to go, I got to step away from this because I just got hit so hard.
Yeah.
But if you got the courage and the will to come back and say, I'm going to try again, even if that next day it's just a little step, and then you push and you push and you get your head back in the game at some point, those are the people that win. Those are the people that are successful.
Yeah. You ever fall off a horse?
No, but I've fallen off a motorcycle. Is that the same?
So pretty much. You know, when people say, oh, you fall off the horse, you get right back on it. Well, first of all, you don't. It's not like you pop back up, you spring back up on your feet. First, you got to catch your breath because you probably got the wind knocked out of you. Probably hit something else when you fell down. The horse might have stepped on you a little bit. Got to dust yourself off, get clarity back in your head. Then the damn horse probably took off halfway down the field. So you got to corral them before you can finally settle them down and get the courage to get back up on that sucker. So probably a good analogy as to what you're saying is what I'm.
Yeah, it is.
It might take a little bit.
It does.
And, but you'll get up there.
And don't expect your mind to be right when you do fall off the horse, when that arrow does, or when the string snaps and, you know, it's a misfire, as you said. Don't expect it. Oh, you know what? I'm okay. I'm shaking it off. I'm right back in it. It might take a minute.
Oh, yeah. The bow and arrow example?
Yeah.
Oh, that hurts when the string snaps. Smacks you across the face afterwards.
That's the thing that people don't quite understand is they think hopping into business is all kittens and rainbows. But, you know, kittens got claws and rainbows fall out the sky.
And a unicorn's got a horn.
What are you going to do with that horn? Right.
Take it away. So now that we've just kind of wrapped up 2020 in a nutshell, what are you going to do for 2020? Actually, so far, it sounds like 2020 has kind of been good to you. I mean, after you got laid off, you started a business. Everything you've kind of put forth, You know, you spoke it, it came to an existence. Your business is starting to ramp up fairly well, becoming successful. And now you're going to 2021.
Oh yeah. So
what can we expect out of, and it is Fat Farmer Sauce, right?
Yeah. Fat Farmer Sauce Co.
Fatfarmersauce.com.
Yeah. Fatfarmersauce.com.
But it's Fat Farmer Sauce. So I'm just going to give you a little plug there. So people, we've been talking about your hot sauce and I'm not sure how many times we've said what the product actually,
Drooling. I'm going to,
I know,
load up,
especially the nut sauce for your wife. Mm. It's like, honey, so 2021, what, you said you're big into goals. I mean, today's the 29th of December, 2020. Do you have your 2021 goals already established?
Yeah, we've sat down and figured some of those out. Me and my wife. We run the company together.
Yeah, let me translate what Devin's saying. She sat down and told him exactly what he's going to do in 2021. Am I close?
We learned that last week.
I couldn't have a better wife, man. She.
Oh, nice recovery. Look at that, man.
She's sitting in the room.
Yeah, I know. She's like,
glare.
Better. I heard that.
If you want dinner tonight, lady. Guess what?
She's looking at me.
Help me.
He's holding up signs on Skype. Please, guys, help me.
He's going back to TikTok. He's going to spell it out and like goat turd in the field. Help me.
Oh, my gosh.
So.
Well, actually, one of the things we talked a little bit about this earlier, but I do want to go back and touch on something that you stated that is so critical. And we have talked about this before, but I don't want to let it slip in case you are new to the show. So you guys have already worked on goals for 2021. Darren and I are really big on goals. We've talked about it many times on the show. A couple of things. Number one, big on writing them down. Mm-hmm. I do it every year. I write, you know, we've already been working on our, in fact, that's the meeting that Darren and I were in before we came in here. We were talking about goals for 2021. I always write my stuff down, really, really disciplined about it. But where it becomes very powerful is what you said earlier, and that is, you take that and then you break it down to what do I need to do today? Because if you look at your business, you're like, I want to double my business next year. If you just make the statement, you're like, oh, Jesus, how the hell am I going to double my business? That sounds crazy. But then if you take that and you break it down, okay, so if I double my business, then this is what I need to do in January. Mm-hmm. And if that's what I need to do in January, this is what I need to do tomorrow. And when you break it down to those smallest pieces, it's like, well, that doesn't seem so hard. If I just do it day by day and, you know, get disciplined about writing it down and breaking it down and just working day by day to try to get it, all of a sudden you'll get a couple months into it. I'm like, oh my God, I'm actually on my way to getting it done.
Micro steps. That's all it is.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
I think it's been oversaid. You know, the journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step. That is really how you have to look at this to be successful. You really have to break it down to what is my next step? What can I do today?
Yeah.
Even if it is, maybe I can organize, you know, if you're a sauce company like me, maybe I can organize my recipe book today. Maybe I can work on taxes. Maybe I can, you know, filter peppers or, you know, everybody has got something they can do that day that they didn't do yesterday.
Yeah.
That'll help them in tomorrow.
Nowhere is too far to walk as long as you got the time.
Oh, yeah.
But
something like that.
Going to give you a one thing not to do with your goals. I know you said write them down. Don't tattoo your next year's goals on your body.
Why, Darren?
Because I just thought of that in my head.
Because it's like, dumb?
Yeah.
I
thought of that. Just I think it'd be a great thing
in
a movie.
That's what Excel is for.
Dude, I just wrote down my goals so I won't forget them. I tattooed them on my own.
Oh. You know, they make spreadsheets for that.
Sorry.
Don't tattoo the spreadsheet either.
Yes, please. No.
How? Excel spreadsheet? Google Sheets probably is less painful. Actually, it's more painful if you've used both. One of the few things that Google doesn't do better than Microsoft.
Right. Shocking, isn't it?
So what big things can we expect from your company this year that you can discuss for your 2021 goals? The Knot Sauce.
Yeah. So the big one's going to be, one of the big ones is going to be our Knot Sauce line dropping. Mm-hmm. We're wanting to drop a whole nother line of butters. Right now we've got the apple butter. We're wanting to do like blueberry, peach, pear, whole bunch of those. Blueberry. We're wanting to get into store shelves.
So you're
consistently into store shelves.
You say consistently.
And another one.
Have you tried it yet?
Go ahead. Sorry.
I'm sorry. I want you to finish. Remind Jake, remember this. He's got one more thing he's going to tell us, but you said consistently into store shelves. Are you in stores right now?
No, but there's a big issue. If people just try to hop into a store shelf, you'll fizzle out and die.
All right.
You got to build a following that will go to the store and buy your stuff.
Okay. So we'll come to that part. Now on to your third part that I interrupted you from.
Are you good? You didn't interrupt me. My wife's told me that I never get interrupted. I only do the interrupting.
You've not spent enough time around Darren, obviously.
The other thing is we want to partner with someone, you know, a Knot Sauce oriented business. That's another thing that we're wanting to do, and do a sauce with them. We want to do a limited edition sauce with somebody.
Like a Knot Wings.
So they did that. It's pretty good, man. Jesus, Darren.
What? I thought he could use that. He's probably going to run with it. He's like, he's already actually got that.
He's trademarking it right now.
Damn it. I missed out.
Yeah, I need the royalty. I got it trademarked real quick.
So like some sort of adjacency, some sort of product adjacency where you guys can do a partnership.
Yeah, where, you know, we find, you know, somebody that likes our product and we're able to make a sauce, you know, help them get a little bit of money in, help us get a little bit in, and kind of help each other spread the names.
Yeah,
that's good.
That makes a lot of sense.
Three big goals. So I want to ask you another question, because you went your social media, you've like grew your social media following. You've gone to multiple platforms. And then this next year, you've given us three of those goals again: more butters, getting into the retail market, and finding a partner. Have you thought like a different way maybe to grow your product is going to an influencer? Because we've all kind of heard about those.
Yeah, well, I've been in discussions with a guy named the Atomic Menace. About sending him a sauce. We've actually made a custom sauce for him, and we're going to send it off to him.
Okay.
Hopefully getting him to do something. There's a couple of big YouTubers around our area that I want to send them some sauces to review. Get a couple of reviews out there on some of these, you know, $100,000 follower people. And a buddy of mine I'm friends with, he runs a TikTok channel. His name's Andy Gabs. He's got like 400,000 TikTok followers.
Jesus.
Send it to him. Let him get one.
Well, Andy listened to our show. Well, he's going to listen to this episode now.
He's going to have to.
Yeah.
Right?
I didn't hear you say anything about the Beer and Business podcast being a part of that. I mean, we're kind of big.
Shoot, I'd love to. Shoot, let's partner. Let's do a sauce. I'll make one for you.
All right. I think we can talk about that.
We could do that.
Yeah. Beer and Business hot sauce.
Oh, yeah.
Totally down for that. Mm-hmm. We'll have discussions after the show.
I'm telling you, I'll do it. We'll make it huge. Huge,
it will be, as long as it's not made in Jida. Frankly, I think that would be disgraceful. And Darren, you probably don't understand that. That means it's full of disgrace. Okay? I was so going to miss him, man. God,
what are we going to do next year, 2021? You better start working on Biden.
Yeah, just being confused and... You know, Jerry has to get
his voice. You can do it, Biden.
I'm gonna have to work on it. Oh my gosh!
And we'll make hot sauce in the library stack soup cans.
Yeah, bad a gaff car. Looking at caramel and pecans on squirrel backs. Stuff.
And that's what we think about the coronavirus.
Maybe you should work on Nancy Pelosi instead. Do that.
Oh
point.
Jesus! I got standards, Darren. Okay.
Anyway,
so Devin, I want to make sure that I preface something, because as people have been listening to you, there's a few things that I want to make sure that they walk away with. Number one, you are in an industry where well over 9 out of 10 startups fail. well over 9 out of 10, Darren.
Oh yeah.
The numbers in this industry, in food manufacturing, they are staggering.
I have a feeling that Devin didn't check that stat before he started this.
Probably a good thing that he didn't.
Yeah.
I didn't.
He's like, no, I had no idea.
I checked it after the fact.
Yeah. I mean, I did a lot of research because I still hold some intellectual property that I may get into this business at some point.
I'm sorry. The word intellectual and property and I know, coming, and out, of coming mouth, out of your mouth and that like, you have some of it.
Yeah. I have some. Notice it's not making any money. So how friggin' valuable is it? But, I've researched it heavily.
10.
And the numbers are absolutely staggering. So it is hard to do what Devin has done. Extremely hard. And I also want to preface something. Devin's young. He sounds very wise. He sounds very mature, very
He's a guy we seasoned. Can ask him his age. If it was a woman.
So tell us, Devin, how old are you?
I just turned 22.
Wow.
Yep. Okay, Darren.
22.
Yeah. But listen you to are the
wise
the,
above you. I mean, I've,
wise
I've
beyond said his
this
years.
Once before on this show. You're wise beyond your years. We had somebody who was in their early 20s as well, probably 18 Corey. When they started, Corey, who's now turned 30. But again, wise beyond his years. I mean, everything that you've said, that you've talked about, is people go to very expensive schools to get very expensive MBAs.
And still don't understand the things that you're saying.
They don't understand
the words. Mm-hmm. Thanks.
And those schools start with a W and an H. And they get their
degrees. Wharton School of what?
I didn't say the Wharton School of Harvard Business. What? Huh?
Yes. So,
they just don't understand.
Devin, we're going to give you kudos there.
Yeah, man. I was actually shocked when we did our first conversation a few weeks ago. You were walking me through, and then I learned how old you were, and I was like, holy shit, dude, you've got a lot figured out for your age. Not in a disrespectful way, but I'm just saying, at 22, I only wish I was as wise as you are, and you're figuring a lot of stuff out. So, I mean, I'm not too proud to learn from somebody that's half my age, literally.
I do get why he knows TikTok so well.
Now, yeah, exactly. Now you know. Yeah, Darren and I don't even know what a TikTok is.
It's the thing that the clock does.
It's this platform that the youth like me is utilizing.
Right. I don't even know what the hell that means. Is it on the computer?
What we doing?
Is it on the computer?
Yeah,
I bet
when
it
you
is.
Live on a farm, it is.
Yes. So yes, I'm really impressed by what you've done, mm-hmm. and definitely interested in following your story and watching your business grow. Finding my wife some knot sauce so she can finally appreciate what the hell I do with all these sauces that are in my house. And I think I'd like to have you back on the show at some point. I'd love to hear how things are progressing in the future.
Follow up time.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'd love to come back.
But I want to encourage all of our fans, if you like barbecue, if you like hot sauce, if you like apple butter, you need to go to fatfarmersauce.com. Right? I got that right?
Yeah.
Are you actually a fat farmer?
I'm a farmer, but I'm not quite that fat anymore.
You know what? Owning a business will do that to you.
We're following him on the gram now.
Oh, he's on the Instagram. But yeah, I really appreciate you coming. Oh my God, look at those peppers. Lord have mercy. I don't even know what
those peppers are.
Yeah, those are.
We own grams.
We're looking at pictures on there. I'm like, how did you get Instagram? Did you download that?
I downloaded the app.
I'm talking to Darren.
I told you. This
I can't believe
the
Darren figured
Sorry.
It out.
So what happened a while ago, Devin, is we did an episode about
social media
and removing it. And so we've removed a bunch of social media from our phones.
But we never posted the episode.
You never posted that
episode?
That's
the only episode I've never posted.
Are you serious?
Yep.
So people don't realize when we do this, so we don't have a lot of it on social media feeds and apps on our phones. But I did tell Jake, I can't cancel this one because I do the gram for the podcast on my phone. So
that's how many followers should you get us up to? 5?
Us?
Yes.
Hold on. Devin is now at 103 on Instagram. He's got to work on his Instagram following.
I'm just saying.
Just saying.
Listen, man, don't feel bad. Our social is so bad. We suck at it. Dude, we have
181 now.
Oh, what?
Yeah. And you know how many we had when I took over? 180.
Congratulations, Darren. That's a
no, good job, dude. You were like in low double digits, yeah, like 20 something.
12. So. Yeah. Yeah. No, that's
good. I'm going to have Devin take care of our.
But yeah, we need to dance on TikTok or something like that.
Oh, I just can't. No, don't make me.
But Devin, I really appreciate you coming on the show and sharing your wisdom and your experience. And I just want to preface the fact that you have succeeded where so many else have failed, even your own friends. Others that have decided, oh, I want to get into it and realize that this is a tough business to be in. But your patience, your ability to be wise and keep grinding and, you know, have relentless focus on quality, listening to feedback. I mean, all those things have really paid off for you. And it's been really fascinating hearing your story and learning more about you.
Well, thank you, man. I've enjoyed sitting and chatting with you.
We'll get to a swap. We're going to have to, well, he's 22.
Yeah.
So we're going to have to send him some Lion Creek beer.
Yep.
And he's going to have to, once he gets that, then he can send us some of the hot sauces.
Yeah.
Hot sauces, not the not sauces.
Well, we might have to do a beer and business collab.
There we go. Well, South Carolina, we could drive up there.
Load the trunk. Load the truck.
Yes, big time. Come on up.
Well, Devin, we want to encourage all of our listeners, fatfarmersauce.com. Go buy some. Go load up on barbecue and hot sauce. And of course, you'll buy more of his wife's apple butter because she's better at making food than he is. But we all knew that because she's a woman.
He's the one who said it.
Yeah, well, we all knew it. But Devin, thank you so much for your time, man. This has been awesome. We also want to remind our guests, please support the official beer, the Beer and Business Podcast, Lion Creek Brewing. Mm-hmm. Folks, it's not free. They support this podcast. We actually switched over. We started with the Total Consciousness Freeze Gopher Black IPA, double IPA, actually, okay, to start. And then while we were talking, we switched over to a Pilsner called Cue the Applause. Mm-hmm. Not applause, a pause. Because if you drink this beer, $1 of every can, or every six pack, rather, goes to the...
Got it. Royal.
Royal Animal Refuge.
Royal Animal Refuge.
I'm only doing this because the print is so small.
Put your glasses on.
Yes. I need my reading glasses to
read this. There's Bruno on one side.
Yes.
Bruno the dog. And then there's Batman and Junior on the other side. So every six pack. It'd be great if it was every beer got a buck. But every six pack every six that pack. You buy, they
$1 goes to
Royal Animal
Royal
Rescue.
Animal.
Oh, good Lord. If Jake's wife is
refuge,
listening, he's only had two beers today.
But it's actually a really good beer. It's a nice delicious light drinker. It's a good pool beer. Support Lion Creek people. Seriously, buy their beer. It's freaking awesome.
And don't support some Fat Farmer sauce.
Yeah, go buy some. You need
you can
hot
buy
sauce
it online.
And he's got good stuff.
And buy apple butter.
Yeah, because his wife makes better stuff than he does.
He said it.
Yep.
Devin, thanks so much, buddy. We appreciate it.
Thank you,
folks.
Devin.
We'll see you next week.